The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
You do have a very good voice for radio.
Thanks so much, Nick. You have got an amazing face for comedy.
This makes me feel like I'm sat in the back of an Uber, late for a meeting somewhere.
There's nothing that magic can do to extract ourselves from the Uber FM branding. There's nothing we can do. We can add as much personality and craziness on air as we like, but people will always associate us with being in the back of an Uber, and that's fine by me. Here's ABBA.
Some of my happiest memories are in the back of an Uber, listening to your voice.
Oh, Nick. Absolutely lovely.
I do text you though, don't I?
You do. It just makes me think, God, your life must be awful if some of your happiest memories are sitting in a car with me talking. I'll still take it.
It's not because of you. It's not necessarily because of you, but it does add.
Yeah, right. Is it because you're showing, you've picked up a lady and you're taking them home and you're like, that guy on the radio, I know him. She's like, no, you don't. No way. Yeah, I'll text him now. Watch. Is it that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Sort of. Yeah. Fame.
Instant BJs.
Hello, welcome back. It's my mate, Bought a Toaster. Joining me today, a comedian, a writer, a presenter, a brilliant actor. Presenter, have you done presenting, Nick Helm? Have I just sort of made that up? I often make these up.
I presented a food show in character, though, so I don't know if it counts.
That counts, yeah. You stood and faced a camera and spoke words to the audience at home. That's presenting,
yes.
Isn't it?
Here
you
go. I've done that, yeah.
Nick Helm, thank you so much for joining us. I am inside your Amazon as we speak, and we're going to just dive straight in, okay? I don't want any chit-chat. We just need to get down to work, okay?
Okay.
And your first order that you ever placed on Amazon...
Yeah.
Was in May 2003.
Wow, how'd you get all the way back there?
May 2000, just simple clicking, just some basic clicking skills that I've got. You spent £23 on two books. You bought Contacts 2003 for Stage, yeah, Theatre and Screen by Kate Poynton. She's the editor, right, of Contacts. I mean, that's just essentially the yellow pages of Lovies, isn't it?
Right, sure.
Everyone gets that when they first start the industry, and then within a couple of years, they just sort of, they're, you know.
Never looked at it.
No. No.
And I doubt I've still got it, and it would be woefully out of... What year? 2003?
And yeah, I mean, that's a while back, isn't it? It's unlikely that anyone is still there, with any relevance on there.
Still alive.
It reminds me, that book is a similar thing we often get this on the show. People buying all their books before they go to university, and this kind of, I'm preparing, I'm getting ready for this acting career, and I'm going to buy all the stuff I need, I'm going to buy all my... like the practical theatre books, and Contacts 2003, that is like a practical thing you can buy to begin your journey as an actor. Is that what we assume you're doing in May 2003? Yes.
Yeah. I suppose so. What did I do? I was in between. I'd finished uni. I finished uni in 2002.
Okay.
And I wasn't. And I'd done. I'd written two Edinburghs by that point, 2001, 2002, and then 2004 was going to be my next Edinburgh. So I was trying to make it as an actor.
Okay, fine. But those Edinburghs you'd done in 01 and 02, as we like to call them, they weren't the Nick Helm thing that you went on to become and do, right? They were like shows, plays, right?
They were sort of, they were like 10-minute mini plays. They were like, an hour each, and they'd consist of like six sort of, they weren't really sketches because they were too long. They were sort of like one-act plays.
Okay, right.
Or one scene plays, really.
Right.
Sit on a theme. So the first one was called Air Freshener. It was all about relationships ending. Right. And then the second one was sort of like... called Christmas Tree. And it was, again, it was like a follow-up. And it was kind of like Christmas trees, you know. I think there's some sort of reference to it in Fight Club as well. But those Christmas trees are loved for a little amount of time. And then they're put out in the cold. Wow. When they're not needed anymore.
Oh, God.
And so it was a show about those themes. Yeah. But it was they were very dark. I'd done like three Edinburghs with my school beforehand, before I left for uni. And then second year of uni, I wrote a collection of plays, and then the second, and then the third year of uni, I wrote another collection of plays.
Did you act in them as well, or were you just like, were you just the sort of artistically challenged guy at the back of the room, looking sort of flouncing off when it wasn't done properly?
No, I wrote them, and then I was in them. Right. And my friend Ed wrote a bit on them as well, and then I directed them. And but what was I going to say? Yeah, but like this, they were all very dark, and they were depressive, and they were about relationships, and they were funny as well.
Yeah.
But I think like the seeds of what I later went on to do.
Yeah.
Like there was a song in there and stuff like that, and I think that that when I'm, it was so much effort putting together like a play, writing a play, directing a thing. You know, we used to build all of the props and the set in my garden in the summer.
Oh, can you imagine having that much energy to do that now? Fuck.
That is sort of what I still do.
What you still
do? It's exhausting.
To make props and think about plots at the same time. Props and plots, Nick. Are you joking?
Well, not plots so much, but stand-up and songs and then costumes and set. And, you know, I put, all my shows have production values and stuff, which all comes from theatre.
Yes.
But I think you can see, like, the germs of what I'd later become in... And they are germs. You can see, like, where I started in those original shows. I haven't changed my sensibilities that much in that amount of time. I've just sort of matured a bit.
And those shows help you find your voice, right? Before you then lost your voice by shouting at people in your inimitable
Never lost way. My voice through shouting. Never lost my voice through shouting.
Really?
Yes. You know, there was that mime. There is that mime. The clown, Dr. Brown.
Mm.
And he asked me for advice on one year in Edinburgh, 3 days into the festival.
What? He lost his voice already?
It said he'd lost his voice, and do I have any tips? And I was just like, I shout every day. You're a mime. You don't talk and you've lost your voice. And I shout every day for an hour and I've never lost my voice. And I never understood it. But
oh my God.
Yeah, I was offended, really. Well, if I can do a month without losing my voice, I don't understand how you, without talking, can lose your voice in 3 days. I was offended on behalf of the profession.
Also, Nick, I can tell that you've clearly got health on your side. By the way, I'm loving the sound of, is that kids in the background screaming? Have you got some kids trapped under the sofa?
I've got my window open. Do you want me to close my window?
Absolutely not. No, don't worry about it. It's nice. I like the sound of kids playing in the distance. That's quite nice because often it's my kids and they're in the distance.
No, they're in the flat, but they always get excited when I open the window.
Okay. It's because they can hear their parents calling for them. June 2003, here he is, look, Dr. Atkins, the new diet cookbook, mouthwatering meals. Yeah. Now, Dr. Atkins, I mean, aka the colon clogger himself. This is the thing, isn't it, with Atkins? You rip out all of the sugar and carbs and you just fill yourself with protein.
Sure, that is what happens.
Ugh. Did it work?
It did. And do you know, I had a friend in Brighton who I've always struggled with my weight, and I had a friend in Brighton and he was on the Atkins diet, and he was just sort of, he just sort of like described it. He said, you just eat meat. And I thought, that doesn't sound healthy.
Yeah.
And then, so I bought a book about it and I did it. And this is 2003. So what month?
2003. That is June 2003. June 2003.
So I was 22 back then.
Yeah.
So I think I did it, and I lost quite a lot of weight, and I felt actually really full of energy and really sort of like happy about stuff. But then what happens is you get to a point when you sort of like start introducing yourself back to carbs, and then you just put the weight on
because carbs twice as much. Carbs are great as well. It is. I mean, that's what I did Atkins as well. In fact, I did it a similar sort of time, back 2002. I did it, and I found it. I got really bad sugar crashes because I've got such a sweet tooth. Like I'm just my bloodstream is just an arteries for sugar. Basically, that's what it is. And so the Atkins diet was a really big challenge. And I remember driving, having not had any sugar that day, and I very nearly crashed my red Metro in Nottingham. In fact, and that was the end of the Dr. Atkins diet because I couldn't shit. I was full of cheese, and I nearly died.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Oh wow! No, I didn't have any of that. I was. I was. Yeah. I was. I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
And I felt like I was full of energy. But then also the one thing was that, like, how serious is this podcast? Is it really, go dark?
Or mate,
do we...
absolutely. We go anywhere. I've told, this is a, we're on memory lane. Sometimes we're going to fall into the ditch and look up at the stars. Sometimes we're going to jump over a fence and go walking through a field. And sometimes we're just going to make bad toilet jokes. Whatever you want to do, do it.
Well, I don't know if I want to, but it's part of the conversation, and I try and be as honest as possible when do interviews.
Yes, please, let's do this. But,
so I've had sort of eating disorders in my past, and and everyone when I was doing Atkins was like saying that, you know, this is really unhealthy, it's really bad for you, and I was thinking, yeah, it is, but at least I'm eating, and I'm keeping it down, and I was actually, the way I reasoned it was actually eating food. Is better than not eating food.
Yeah.
So I thought it may be unhealthy, but also compared to what I had been putting myself through, then it was a step up, if anything.
It's become a more known thing that boys, men have eating disorders, but certainly then, when you were younger, that men having eating disorders, that was pretty much unheard of, wasn't it?
No, it
wasn't talked about anyway. Not in terms of rareness, it happened, but in terms of its public profile, it wasn't talked about.
Yeah, I probably got developed my eating disorders when I was at secondary school, probably when I was about 16 or 17, maybe.
Right.
And but when I was at university, we did it wasn't media studies, it was drama, television, and theatre. And so there was a module where we made documentaries. So we made documentaries about eating disorders, and one of the things was that kind of like there was loads of girls and women that would talk about their eating disorders, but there were hardly any men. But then we did find a few, and so we made a film about that. And it's not what turned me on to eating disorders, but it was just kind of like it was interesting to find out that there are other people out there, because no one, if you're a man, no one really talks about them.
Yeah.
And I don't actually, I've never mentioned it before in anything. This is the first time.
Right. Oh, great. In terms of exclusives that I wanted to get, Nick, I didn't want to go this serious, but it's an important topic. I didn't know this about you. I didn't know this.
I've suffered from like all sorts of eating disorders and mental health issues for most of my life. But when I was a teenager, I was so miserable at school. I got really sort of like desperate. And, it's just one of those things that you sort of have to control through diet. And Atkins was really good for me at a certain point because it meant that, and also with eating disorders, there's lots of reasons why people develop with them. But one of the main ones is it's a control thing.
Yeah.
And when you feel like you don't have any control in your life, then you sort of go, well, what's the one thing I can control? And it's like what I do with food. Yeah. And so when I was on Atkins, it was just like, it was very regimented, and it was kind of like, oh, it's like this is almost 20 years ago now. This is 17 years ago.
I know, but it's still fresh for you. And is it all under control now, right? Is this all the past, or is this something you still have to monitor and keep across in your life?
I think that, I'm always sort of like struggling, but I'm a lot better these days. Last few years, I've been a lot better. And also, you have to take responsibility at some point and go, oh, if I eat this, then I feel like shit. And, I try and be sick or whatever.
Yeah.
And so then you think, actually, do you know what? I won't do that and I'll do this instead. And, so going to the gym and going for therapy and all that other stuff, that's kind of like all stuff that helps you kind of deal with it.
Yeah.
And also you can't just be, after 20 years or 25 years of it, you can't just see yourself as some sort of victim. You need to sort of like go, right, well, how do I actually do something about it in order to help myself? If I'm the only person that can help me, how do I help me?
Yeah.
And you can do it by just and you don't always succeed, but you can do it by being like kind of just more responsible for yourself and just take more care about what you eat and stuff like that.
It's that thing about liking yourself, man. We've talked about this before on the podcast because we see it a lot in things that people buy weirdly on Amazon. People trying to sort of treat themselves. So this is maybe the other part of the conversation, but people are trying to be nice to themselves a lot. And they see things they bought and they go, fuck, I don't know why I got that. God, I was just trying to treat myself. And it didn't really make any difference in the long term. And I guess when you know that you have a solution or a series of weapons, tools against this problem, your eating thing in this instance, That's being nice to yourself. Using those tools has been nice to yourself, but it's fucking hard to do that because you've got to like yourself, and sometimes that's a big ask.
Well, also one of the things about Amazon is that, you know, the point where you feel that you're best with Amazon is when you click on it and buy it, and then it arriving is almost secondary.
Yes. Yeah.
I've got so many DVDs and Blu-rays that are still in the cellophane that I wanted to own, but I've never got around to watching. And so many books that I've never read, but, you know, they're on a subject that I was just like, oh, I want to learn more about that. And then you realize, you know, if I watch a 15-minute YouTube video, that sort of nails it. I don't need a book on the shelf, you know.
Yeah.
So Amazon's a real weird one like that. I'd say 90% of the purchases on here are DVDs and Blu-rays and box sets and stuff.
But that is perfect, because that's what this show often illustrates is, that's what Amazon, I should say, illustrates exactly that, the person we're trying to be. Like we've had, you know, people go through this crazy astronomy fad. That's when we had a couple of weeks ago. Someone just bought shitloads of astronomy books, literally never opened one of them, but just because they wanted to be able to talk about the moon at dinner parties. It's that kind of who we're trying to be.
It's knowledge by osmosis. If I own the books, then I'm sort of like, I am the books. Yeah. and it doesn't work. Now. But also, we're only two in. The first one was Contact.
Yeah.
So that I could help my career, and the second one was Atkins, so that I could sort of like try and control my eating habits.
These are both positive things, mate. These are both positive things.
Well, they are, but it's self-help, and then it's self-congratulation, isn't it?
Yeah, that's fine though. That's it. I feel like there's something in Amazon is something we grab onto. It's social media, but in a material way. Like we go to Facebook and Instagram or whatever because we kind of want that abstract hit, that hook. And Amazon is a literal hook, literal hit of give me a thing. I need something to improve this situation. And it always tells a story. No more so than the fact that you then go dark for 2 years on Amazon. By the way, you come back into the welcoming, non-tax-paying arms of Amazon in 2006. This is definitely something which Nick Helm has bought. The Dirt, Motley Crue, Confessions of the World's Most Notorious Rock Band.
Yes, although that was a gift.
Oh, right.
So I bought that from my friend John Harrison for Christmas. So we went through, I hadn't read it at that point, we went through a period, because when I was young, I would sort of, I would be listening to Alice Cooper, and like 80s hair metal. So I'd be listening to Whitesnake and Twisted Sister and bands like that.
Yeah.
And they were like listening to, you know, Fender Boys. and then everyone used to treat me like I was the odd one out. And then when we got older, we went to see Kiss play, and we went to see Motley Crue and Def Leppard.
Yeah.
And so then we went through like, what do we get? We're best mates. So what do we get each other for Christmas? So we'd get each other like a hair metal cock rock gift. And so I got him, I think that year, that makes sense if it was about November, I got him The Dirt.
Yeah.
I can't remember what he got me, but that we'd sort of like, we'd, you know, do like an, I wouldn't buy any of my other friends any presents, but it'd be me and John, we lived down the road, we'd see each other on Christmas Eve, give him a gift, he'd give me a gift, and we'd go out, get drunk, and then buy a pizza at 3 o'clock in the morning on Christmas Day and ruin Christmas.
Yeah, of course, classic. That's rather lovely, it's rather touching. So John, so this is your childhood friend?
Yeah, well, we weren't friends. I mean, is this what the podcast is? It's like, so we weren't friends. We were enemies.
Sounds like it. Meeting up, giving each other presents. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Well, when we were at school, he was part of like the other. So we joined secondary school the same year, but we never were friends until we both ended up going to V98 together. We went to V98, and there was a whole group of kids. Us lot. Yeah. I think I went to Glastonbury that year, but I had a miserable time because my mate basically had dysentery, and he spent the whole weekend shitting out the front of the tent.
Oh, Jesus.
He was so ill, and he almost got run over by Rolf Harris, so he was always evil.
Yeah, another always one of Rolf evil. Harris's victims. Unbelievable. That is ridiculous.
And so I had a really miserable time in Glastonbury that year. And then later on, everyone was going to V98, and I was like, I'd like to go. And they said, well, you've already done Glastonbury. And I was like, yeah, I know, but, you know.
Can't do it. So was that a Reading V98? Was that a Reading one or a Leeds festival thing?
I think it was Leeds, because when we were there, we would everyone was shouting at night, "Southerners suck cock."
How lovely. Oh, it's that northern bants.
We were all from Hertfordshire, so we were all terrified. But it was like boys and girls.
You were just going, "Yes, we do. Yes, absolutely true.
Yes, absolutely." But there was like a mixture of boys and girls, and everyone was sort of sleeping with each other, except for me and John. So, and then they were sleeping with each other and arguing with each other. So I was always like, "Oh, it's like camping with Fleetwood Mac." And then one morning, because I used to smoke back then, and one morning I woke up and he woke up and the sun was rising and everyone else was asleep. And I remember it took me a whole box of matches to light one cigarette because it was windy. Mm. And then we had a Strongbow together and we just started like small talk. And then that was the moment that we became friends.
That's beautiful. And then you met over a cigarette as the sun rose on a festival with a shared can of cider. That's the most romantic thing I've ever heard anyone say.
With an enemy.
Yeah,
and
well,
then
exactly.
That was the moment.
Yeah.
We put our differences aside and we went to see Robbie Williams because I'd been drinking cider all day. I fainted.
Fucking hell. So do people think it's because you're a massive Robbie Williams fan?
Yeah. I think people know that I'm not a Robbie Williams fan now, but at the time it was very difficult to deny. I've fainted at one concert and it was Robbie Williams.
Hello, my name is Pete Ellison. This is Dave Cribb.
Hello, and we do a podcast called Friends with Friends, as you might have guessed from the music that's playing underneath, which is a sort of lo-fi rendition of the Friends theme tune for rights reasons. We get a different guest on every week on our podcast to talk about their favourite episode of Friends.
And we look through it in excruciating detail. We pick through levels of plots like no one has ever done before.
So if you like Friends or just listening to people talking, which are both valid activities, do look us up on the old podcast apps and that. Friends with Friends, and we're on Twitter at FriendsWF.
When they're looking through your shopping history and they don't understand it, you have been bought red-handed.
1st of December, and maybe this is for John as well, the magic of pants. This is a great return to Amazon. Like, you spend years off Amazon and suddenly Nick Helm is back and he's buying the magic of pants. This is a cornucopia of magic tricks to boost your personal entertainment repertoire. Have your audience marvel at the mystery of the phenomenal floating frillies, gasp at the grace of the escape from Pantsatraz, doesn't even work, scream at the surprise ending of The Bride of Pantenstein, that's better, prepare for your side twangs to be tugged as the power of the pants is revealed. Pantsacadabra does not work either. A lot of misfiring puns in that. Do you want to explain to us?
I don't know what you mean by misfiring. Pantsatraz is obviously Alcatraz, Pantsacadabra is obviously abracadabra. So both of them work on the Helm test.
I mean, absolutely not. The pun the pun system requires some kind of rhyming or sounding like Pantsacadabra. Anyway, so what is this?
Don't have any memory of it. I don't know.
Oh, it's a shame.
All I can imagine is that either I was trying to learn some stage skills.
Oh, okay.
When was it? Was it like November, December?
December the 1st, 2006. Yeah, you should remember.
It may have been a joke that I bought for my dad for Christmas.
Okay.
Because I remember that I used to buy him, magic tricks. Because when we were at uni, I got a, you know, one of them big plastic Macintoshes, the ones with the coloured plastic at the back.
Yeah.
They were kind of like a thing. They had a handle at the top and they were like blue or purple or yellow.
Yeah, I totally remember. Yes, yeah.
And they had like a CD-ROM at the front. And I got one of those to for like a birthday Christmas gift thing. Mm. And we used to, all of us in my accommodation in my we had a house share thing. There was like five of us,
right?
And we all used to use it to sort of like basically burn CDs.
Yeah.
And I just have like everyone's music collection on my computer, and we were listening to it at random, and all of a sudden what comes on is my dad's voice just going, this is a test. This is a test. This is magic. This is magic. This is a test. And then forever we called him Tony Magic Helm. Everyone calls him Magic. And so every year I would buy him a magic set. And for like 5 years running, I'd bought him like a magic set to sort of like, so that he could get like a little routine together. Yeah, it was just really sweet because he was just testing the microphone on the thing.
Oh, that's great. That's so
But when we were growing up, we'd do like children's, my dad would like throw birthday parties for us, and all of our friends from school would turn up, and he'd always put on like magic shows and stuff.
Oh, that's adorable.
He's an amazing guy. Yeah, lovely.
Is he
really sweet?
Why was he saying this is magic though? Is that a song that I don't know?
I know. I think that he just loved technology.
Oh, so he was. Oh, I see. He was talking about the computer. He was saying, "This is magic. What I'm doing."
Yeah, but he was singing it. It was lovely. Really lovely.
That is fantastic. Yeah, yeah. So your dad used to do magic tricks at your birthday parties as a kid. That's a nice childhood, Nick. That sounds okay.
Yeah,
that bit.
But
of
not,
it, anyway.
Not if he starts getting his pants out and doing tricks in front of kids.
Hey kids, this is magic.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Do you think your dad could come and sing a jingle for my Magic Weekend Breakfast show?
No.
Okay. So, 2010, what's this? Gounod, Faust by C. Gounod.
Faust? What, the film?
Brilliant. Oh, it's an opera. No, you've got the opera, mate. The box set of the opera. All right, Nick Helm, look at you getting your operas in your life. That's very
good. Oh, Gounod, Faust. Yeah, Gounod, right. So I was doing a project about hell. And okay. I was researching the Faust legend, and so I think there's a German expressionist film called Faust, and I bought the opera to listen to the opera and everything like that.
Why?
But then also
you...
my dad. Go on.
Well, why were you researching hell? What was for a show or just to get ready?
I just wanted to know what the what sort of weather they were getting and what I should be packing. I did part of my show, I Think You Stink, ended with a 15-minute rock opera about hell. Mm-hmm. And I think at one point in Edinburgh, I was going to expand it to be like a full show. It's sort of like a project that's on my back burner where right. I've always wanted to do something with that, like a moral thing.
Yeah.
I'm a massive Alice Cooper fan. I think one of the things that we've been denied in our lives is that at one point I used to work PR at award ceremonies,
right.
And so I used to like take people up and down the red carpet, and one of the times I did that, I was looking after Alice Cooper, who was in the middle of talking to Tim Rice, and Tim Rice was wearing like this lime green suit, and I had to get them. I got Tim Rice two flutes of champagne. And Alice Cooper, Diet Coke, and I was like, that's a weird combination. But it turned out at that time, it must have been like 2006 maybe, right. At that time, Alice Cooper was developing a musical called Alice Cooper's Seven Deadly Sins, and like a stage musical with Tim Rice. It was going to be like this morality play.
Right.
And I just thought it sounded really exciting. And then what I think happened was that fell through. They never ended up making it, but he put a load of the ideas and the work that he'd done into an album called Along Came a Spider.
Okay.
So there was kind of, so I always found it really interesting. So I was thought like, well, if he's not going to do it, then I'd like to do something like that. You know,
I just
do like an Alice Cooper-esque musical.
The idea of Alice Cooper and Tim Rice chatting and Nick Helm is bringing them the drinks.
Yeah.
Oh, mate.
Tim Rice was very gracious. He was just like, I don't suppose you could go to the trouble of getting me a couple of glasses of champagne, could you? And then I handed them to him. And he was like, oh, thank you so much. Thank you. And then Alice Cooper sort of like snatched the can out of my hand and didn't even look at me. It was like, cool. No, skin off my nose. It's fine.
I'd have been so tempted just to get an extra drink and rock up. Just get yourself one as well. Just stand there.
Join in. What are we chatting about?
Yeah. Where we're going, we'll be showing that we listen to toast. Cause these lovely ass people gonna talk to the host.
He's gonna ask a couple questions. What they're buying the most.
Cause one man goddamn just likes a piece of toast.
You're really picking up pace with how much stuff you're buying. 2011, 34 items. Most interesting item here, The Hidden Power of the Dark Side of Human Nature. 23rd of December, as you get towards Christmas, obviously a bleak time for everyone. Any idea why you got that? Meeting the Shadow, The Hidden Power of the Dark Side of Human Nature.
What year was this? 2004?
11.
2011. Because I was writing about depression and psychological stuff, and I thought that really I wanted to base it on some sort of some sort of philosophy or some sort of outlook. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Not just based on what I think, but based on. And also, it's one of those things where I have had depression my entire life, and it's kind of like, right, well, I want to learn a bit about what it is that I'm going through. But I don't think I've ever read those books. I've still got them. I can't get rid of them. I feel like what I, with DVDs and Blu-rays, I think that what my main goal was to have the most intricate kind of library.
Yeah.
Like a huge DVD archive of just every film that ever, my goal, and I'll be very disappointed if I don't achieve this within my lifetime, but my goal is to see every single film that was ever made.
Yeah.
So hopefully, fingers crossed, I'll get there. But also the same with books. It's just kind of like, if I buy all these books for research, then maybe, but again, you've got to read them.
Mate, this is what I've got. This is what I've got in lockdown, though. This idea that the osmosis thing, where you surround yourself with all these books, with all these different parts of yourself that you want to improve and polish and fix and cure and solve. And in buying the books or trying to get the CDs under your eyes, you think you've done it, and then you don't ever fucking look at them. But then lockdown, I'm like, I'm going to read them all. But then you start to sort of joylessly approach them like they're chores. That's the problem with that.
Mm. Well, I saw that you have like quite an extensive, you've read quite a lot of stuff, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly that, in fucking lockdown, rattling through these books, which has been quite fun. It's been enjoyable. But you do get to the end of it and feel a bit like, oh, I've really invested a lot of my time in reading the new Hilary Mantel, and I don't know how much I feel like it's improved me or my life coming out the back end of it, but I will show off about it on social media gladly.
Yeah, but it's the sort of stuff that isn't necessary, you don't necessarily have immediate reward from.
Right.
But like a year down, it's percolated for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then it'll come out. It'll come out at a weird moment where you'll be able to quote something.
Well,
I had a friend at school that just used to read and read and read and read and read. And it'd be like, even if she didn't enjoy a book, she'd finish the book.
Oh, always. Yeah.
And I'm more like, I'll start a book, and if it's not easy, if it's not a page turner, then I'll sort of put it down, and I won't deliberately, but I'll just forget to pick it back up again.
That's it, gone.
Whereas stuff like, it took me ages to read One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest when I was at school, because it was not a big book, but really small print. And so you're, progress in that book was quite slow because it would just take ages to read each page.
Yeah.
But I remember that book for my entire life. It's one of my favorite books. So I'll sort of like, I won't read loads, but when I do, I'm like 100% invested in it.
Yeah.
And that's what I love, is when you just literally, you put a book down and you can't wait until you can go back and read it.
Oh, yeah. I love that feeling of just like it captures part of your brain for the time that you're reading it, the time you're with it.
You've got to have dinner. So you put the book down and you're thinking, oh, I can't wait to get back to that book. But, that happens very few and far between. So I think there's a middle ground between what you do, which is systematically ticking stuff off, and what I do, which is very occasionally falling in love with a book and then...
Yeah.
And really sort of like getting into it.
I think yours is healthier. I tell you what, Nick, 2012, so in 2011, you bought 34 things on Amazon. Do you know what you did in 2012? Do you know how many things you bought?
None or a million?
123.
Fuck.
And in 2013, 169.
Yeah, it's going to get worse.
And then in 2014, it comes back down a bit. It goes down to 133. 145, 2015. Should we do this? Let's. Oh, 2016. 2016. Do you care to take a guess? 2016.
Go on.
2016 was 214.
I feel like you're Greg Wallace emptying out my shopping bags on a table. I moved that year, 2016.
Right. Okay.
Went through a breakup and got my own flat. And so I guess I was just A, getting used to being on my own, and B, buying stuff for my flat.
You've got so much incredible stuff. I mean, I'm just picking random things. You got the official Howard Donald Take That face mask in December 2016. Brilliant.
Yeah. That'll be for my Christmas show.
Oh, right. Okay. You got other celebrity face masks. You got Donald Trump and Robbie Williams. There you go. So when you put on a Robbie Williams face mask, do you faint or not?
Only when I drink loads of cider and stare in the mirror for a bit.
Okay, fine, good. All right. Just know not to do that. What else have we got here? Ghostbusters, Ecto-1 vehicle and Slimer figure.
Yeah.
Toys.
Yeah, I love action figures and stuff like that. But that one was from the remake. And I didn't really like the remake that much.
I haven't seen the remake, so I don't. Yeah, I've heard not to bother of several people.
It's not a remake, is it? It's a reboot. It's whatever it is. I don't know what it is. But so the Ecto one there is a hearse. The Ecto one from the original was a ambulance, and I think the Ecto one from the was it a hearse? I thought it was like an ambulance thing. Originally,
yeah, it's a hearse. Yeah, it's a hearse in the original Ghostbusters. Yeah.
So this one's got like a red roof, and I thought I was buying kind of like I've always loved Ghostbusters. I wanted to sort of like have a vehicle.
Nothing wrong with that.
When I was a kid, I had the Ecto-1 toy from the real Ghostbusters, and I was sort of like trying to relive my youth, but it didn't work.
Right. Yeah. What's the moment like when you're like, yes, I finally got a Ghostbusters toy and I'm in my 30s. Is that a weird moment of self, you know, reflection?
Yeah. But also I try not to become an adult.
Yeah. Well, you've become a bit. There's certainly an adult buying the film 17th of October 2016. Pervert, he's coming to get you.
It's an amazing film.
Includes extended lesbian scenes. Sounds like a classic. Starring Mary Carey.
Yeah, it's sort of. I really used to like Russ Meyer films.
Yes. Okay.
And Pervert was sort of like this film that I think it sort of entered like a bunch of film festivals that was at the time. But I mean, yeah, it's basically a Russ Meyer movie. I watched it. It's all right. It's all right. It does a really good job of recapturing that sort of tone that Russ Meyer used to have in his films.
Yeah.
But it's a one watch.
You've given it a much more intelligent analysis than Stargate SG-1. That's the name of the person who's reviewed it here, who's given it 4 stars. Funny and horny movie like you've never seen before, except in Russ Meyer's movies, of course. Porn star Mary Carey with her wonderful pair of breasts and nice body exemplify that she is not only a very pretty actress, but a good one too. There you go.
Yeah. I mean, I'll buy Mr. Ben.
Yeah, exactly. You're buying Mr. Ben one minute and Pervert the next.
Well, I was my Pervert. I mean, I've got a wide range of interests.
Yeah, this is the yin and yang of Nick Helm. I love it.
I mean, what year was that?
2016. So this is the year you've moved house. So you'd broken up, right? This was a breakup year, was it?
Yeah, but obviously I had full access to the internet as well.
Clearly.
So it's not like... But do you know what I mean? It's not like, you're not going on my YouPorn account and going through my history there, are you?
That is for our Patreon subscribers, we will be doing that later. This is great. You're, this is sort of, there's not almost like a second childhood thing going on. You've got alien signed autograph Sigourney Weaver, £7.98. Sort of bleakly cheap, that really. If that was like 50 quid, I'd respect you, but it was £8.
It's not real. Okay, no. No, but I had a meeting in Los Angeles and I met this casting lady and it was really weird. I went into this, went into the Paramount backlot, Sony backlot, Columbia. So I went to Sony and they have all of these kind of like bungalows where they have these meetings.
Yeah.
Where they're production offices, but they're bungalows. And I had a meeting in Gable. They're all named after famous Hollywood stars. I had a meeting in Gable.
Oh, yeah.
And I went into Gable and it was completely deserted, right? You have to go through like the main gate, went through the main gate, was walking around the Columbia lot, Sony. And I went into this Gable and there was no one on the desk. And I was sort of like walking around this desert thing and they were just all these Adam Sandler posters everywhere, right?
They've got to put them somewhere. Like,
fucking hell. And like, but they were everywhere, like everything, you know. Punch Drunk Love was up there next to Remember the You Don't Mess with the Zohan and Apache Chuck and Larry and all this other stuff. And then this woman that I was meeting, who was lovely, she just walked through the corridor and then she says, "Oh, Nick, you're Nick." And I was like, "Yeah." And so we sat down in this office and I was looking around and there was all this Adam Sandler stuff. And I was like, "Fucking hell, they really love Adam Sandler here." And she goes, "Yeah, we're in his office." And I was like, "No way, no way." And so we had this casting meeting in Adam Sandler's office and and we were talking about it and I mentioned how much I loved the film Tommy Boy.
Right.
And she said that she'd just worked with David Spade because she was producing The Goldbergs, which was Adam Sandler's Happy Madison sitcom. Mm. And she just worked with David Spade. And I was like, "Oh, wow, I love David Spade." And anyway, I came back from Los Angeles and then she asked for my address. And then like 4 weeks later, I got this thing in the post and it was a personalized autograph from David Spade.
What?
Saying, "Hey, Nick, stay sharp," or something. David Spade.
That's so fucking framed. Cool. That's fucking cool. That's better than £7.98 on Amazon. That's very cool.
Yeah. I got it framed and put in my, hung it in my toilet. Yeah. But I felt like he looked lonely. So as a joke, because I love just putting pictures up and hanging pictures and buying picture frames and putting pictures. Like there's not a, like an inch of free wall space basically in my flat. And so then I just sort of like decorated my bathroom.
I mean, I can tell you what you've got. We've got Pamela Anderson.
Yeah.
$4.99. Bill Murray from Caddyshack, the Caddyshack picture, $4.99. Original Ghostbusters cast signed photo, $4.99. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're all like scanned, right?
Massively.
They're a complete waste of money, right?
Yeah.
But I thought it was really funny because you go in and I don't give a shit about autographs and signatures or anything like that. But you go in to my bathroom and you're just surrounded by all of these signed pictures. And there's only one of them that's real.
Oh, and great. And now we know. But surely we know it's real because it says to Nick, right?
Sure, but I also bought Vicky Michelle from
Hello, Hello.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And I managed to find what this one's a real one, but it's like those are all 8x10, and this one's a 7x5 glossy, and she actually signed it to a guy called Nick.
Oh wow.
So it became kind of like a thing where I was like. It's a really sad joke, but like the idea is you go into my toilet and then all of a sudden you're in Planet Hollywood.
A little taste of Planet Hollywood. Wow. Yeah. That is delightful. That is lovely. Is that where you put your Playboy magazines? Because you bought two from May 2016. You've got Pamela Anderson and what's the other one? Oh, Baywatch. You got the Baywatch Playboy, mate. That is, I'm not going to lie to you, that's peak frantically wanking my teenage years away. That is right there.
Sure.
That is, yeah.
Sure. But like I say, you've got the internet now, so you don't really need Playboy. But yeah, so I this is bleak. I was in love with Cameron.
Oh God,
it's not bleak.
God.
It's not bleak. It's just like when I was a kid, I was in love with Pamela Anderson, right. And but like a pure, true love.
Oh yeah, yeah. Unlike the other ones. The other ones were filthy, but yours was right. Yeah, I know.
This was just sort of like I thought, and I still to this day think that if I could get in the same room as Pamela Anderson, it would probably work out. Yeah. I bought. Every single front cover of Playboy that she's ever been on, even to the extent where you've got like group Baywatch shots.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, just to really sort of paint the picture of Nick Holm in 2016, slightly bleak, but there's been a breakup. You're living by yourself now, and you're buying yourself Playboy magazines with a naked lady from the 90s. Yeah, just to really sum that up.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's basically. I'm a bachelor.
Yeah, that's the nice word. Yeah, no, it's
and this is and I've sort of like I've got my own place, and I'm decorating it. You know, not just the walls, but the sheets.
Honestly, this 2016, Nick Helms 2016 on Amazon is one of the greatest years I've ever seen, and I wish we had longer to go through it, because we're just jumping all over the place, because we're going from, you know, you're the bachelor, but obviously you're not planning on being the bachelor for long, because on March the 29th you've bought The Joy of Sex, The Gourmet Guide to Lovemaking by Alex Comfort.
Yeah, good name.
Great name. Any thoughts on that book? Was that well used?
That's one of those books we just thought it'd be good to sort of like have like a basic knowledge of what you're meant to be doing, but I've never looked at it.
Listen to this review. This book was of its time, which was the 1970s. As a newlywed couple in the early 70s, my wife and I found it great fun to read together in bed, and it relaxed us and stimulated us and gave us confidence. Now it just looks silly.
Yeah, The Joy of Sex is more relevant now than it's ever been, really, with that beard. You don't need to do new artwork.
Oh my God, there's just so much stuff in here. There's just so much stuff in here. I'm skipping on ahead, by the way. I'm now.
Sure, I'd rather you did.
What I'm going to do, Nick, because we are running out of time, I am going to go crashing into the very recent past, all right? So let's have a look and see what has been going on with you recently. So for John, I assume this is John Harrison. Is that your previous enemy, now best friend, John Harrison?
Yep.
This is beautiful. You've bought him Lego. You've bought him the Star Wars Millennium Falcon Microfighter Star Wars toy. Is that for him or one of his offspring?
He's got two boys that I got really ill over Christmas, and I like really ill, and I didn't get around to buying him and his kids any presents. Right. And they've literally just had a new baby in lockdown a couple of weeks ago. And I just know that when you have a new baby, you just get through baby grows and stuff really quickly, don't you?
Yes, totally. Yes, yes, yes.
So, and also the kid, he's got three kids and they're all in lockdown. And so I bought them some small Lego kits. And then for the newborn, I bought him a cuddly Millennium Falcon and a baby grow.
It's so lovely, because there you are with him at this festival becoming friends. There you are arriving in London, getting your contacts book, and then suddenly you're in Adam Sandler's office. Like, the journey, Nick. Can you smell that? That's the journey.
It is weird looking back at stuff and thinking about how all of these purchases were sort of like related to a time in your life, Joe.
Yeah. Yeah. I
it's actually a really, actually, do you know what? I think you're onto something here, Tom. It's almost like it's a worthwhile podcast.
Good, I'm glad. It's good. I might do 40 more episodes in that case. That's great.
But it's biographical. You can get all sorts of information out of people. This is a very good idea.
Thank you. Thanks very much indeed. I'd like to say it was mine, but it was my wife's. I want to find one last thing, Nick, that just sort of sums up where we are now. You know, like I'm looking at your current up-to-date orders, and I want something that you know embodies where we've got to. Two of the Cheeky Panda 100% bamboo facial tissue cube. So that's nice. You've got some tissues there. I mean, that's not it's not really helping.
I mean, we're in lockdown.
Well, yeah, maybe that's perfect. Maybe that really is what we've got to. Just ended up by yourself wanking. No, come on, we can't go that bleak. How about this? Here we go. This is ordered. You do a lot of Amazon. Here we go. Perfect. May 2020. But a few days ago, Nick Helm bought in bulk spam.
Yeah, spam.
And not just one tin, six tins of spam.
That won't go off, though. I mean, I don't have to eat that all in one go.
No, absolutely not. But meat from the 70s heading into your life as we speak. Well, tell us why. Yeah. Take us through your spam love.
It was VE Day and my mum bought some spam and she made spam sandwiches for like a retro VE Day snack.
Right.
And then at the same time, I'm obsessed with ramen noodles.
Yes, yes, I can see that. Yes.
I love ramen noodles. And so I was on YouTube and I was watching ramen noodle recipes. And one of the things that a lot of Korean, one of the things they use in a lot of Korean cooking is they use spam and they chop up spam and they fry it and they put it in with the ramen noodles.
No way.
And because my mum was talking about spam, but also I'd been doing YouTube stuff on ramen noodles. There was this video that came up saying ramen noodles with spam, and I thought that's it. I at first, you know, you think, oh, my computer's listening to me.
Yeah,
but then also it was on theme. It wasn't just like a random spam thing, it was all related to ramen noodles. So I bought some spam and I bought loads of noodles.
Wow.
And I'm just sort of like experimenting with spam and noodle recipes.
It came up on your computer. I mean, you literally got spammed by spam.
Fuck, yeah.
Oh, that's meta. God, that's pleasing. Well, listen, this has been anything other than spam. This has been very valuable content, Nick. We found out a lot about you and we've ended
that's
with...
That's what I live for. I live for providing valuable content.
Absolutely. Absolutely. God, mate, I love this. I could keep talking for ages, but we have to stop at some stage. What I'm going to say, and I don't always say this, but I really want you to come back on, and you don't really have a choice because I've got your password, so I'll just start doing it. You can either join in and record your end of it or I'll just go through stuff because the last couple of years are absolutely fascinating. And I think there's a Nick Helm Christmas special in here somewhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I might get a psychologist to come as well if that's all right.
Sure, it is a breakdown. on, you know, you can see where everything fell apart and where things started getting a little bit more spammy.
Listen, talking of the exact opposite of spam, excellent internet content. Your latest stand-up special is out now, isn't it? It's available, or it's about to be out. Actually, I shouldn't say out now, because when is it out? End of May? Is that when you're doing it?
It's out on the 31st of May for download, and on the 30th we're doing a live launch at 8 o'clock online. And I'll be posting all about that.
Okay, great. So the thing to do then is to give you a follow on social media. Nick, was it just Nick Helm?
The Nick Helm... on Twitter.
The Nick Helm on Twitter, brilliant.
And Instagram.
Nick, thank you for being on My Mate Bought a Toaster. This has been absolutely unforgettable.
thanks very much.
There you go, that is Nick Helm on My Mate Bought a Toaster. Sorry, I'm having to speak like this because it's really late and I've just been editing this for the last couple of hours and all my family have now gone to bed. So I'm having to be quiet. But that was Nick Helm. Wasn't he lovely? What a brilliant guy. And yeah, there's loads more in there that I want to explore, so I'm definitely going to get him back. As ever, thank you for listening. Thank you for reviewing it and rating it. We've had some nice reviews, which is great. And I'll be back next week with another My Mate Bought a Toaster. In the meantime, stay safe, stay well, and thanks for all your lovely tweets. Drop us a line, say hi at ToasterPod. See you soon, bye. I won't ever say we're through. I
won't ever say we're through. GreatBigOwl.com.
All of television history is contained within the Box of Delights.
It was happening in front of us.
Incredible.
In our living rooms. It was amazing.
Guests pick their favourite television moment.
And tell us why they love it.
And is this the episode where Daisy's just been for the interview at the Woman's Magazine?
Flaps.
That's it, Flaps.
Yeah.
Named one of Radio Times' best podcasts of the year.
I don't understand people who don't see the joy in drawing the curtains, a mug of hot chocolate and something nice on TV. Like, what could be nicer than that?
Than having a snuggle.
Exactly.
Nostalgia in bite-sized chunks.
Box of Delights
from Great Big Owl.